WATD presents John Paul, the Car Doctor. All things automotive. Have questions? Call 781-837-4900. Now, here's John Paul, the Car Doctor.
And good Sunday morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Car Doctor program on 95.9 WATD. My name is John Paul, the Car Doctor. And if you're saying, he sounds a little different this morning, I wonder what's going on. Well, I'm actually in Denver, where I had to remember it's actually 9 o'clock here and 11 o'clock there. So I had to remember, oh, yeah, I can't wait till 11 to do the radio show. I have to do it at 9. So, and I'll explain why I'm in Denver in a little bit. It wasn't just to go to the Denver Auto Show, although I did go there yesterday, but we'll talk about that as well.
It's also to stare directly into the sun without eye protection.
Yeah, we'll talk about eclipse glasses, I guess, too. So, yeah, we can do that. Yeah, well, you know, it's I don't know that Denver is in the immediate path of it, but hey, it's who knows? We'll just stare into the sun.
Doesn't have to stop you from staring directly in the sun.
All right. We'll do that. with us on the phone is John Vincent. John Vincent's been with us before. He is the senior editor at U.S. World and News Report. And they just came out, and with his work especially, came out with Best Family Cars. And that's always an interesting one. John, good morning, and welcome back to the Car Doctor program.
Good morning.
So you just came out with the Best Family Cars. Can you kind of go over some of the picks and why they were the best family cars?
Sure. Our 2024 Best Cars for Family Awards go to vehicles that, you know, are good cars overall, but also have a lot of family-friendly features, such as, you know, USB ports throughout the car, good safety equipment, things like, you know, even like a conversation mirror like the Toyotas have, that allows you to see the people in the back without having to turn around and look. So we look at our overall scores and then factor in those things and come up with this list of 9 best cars for families based on vehicle categories.
And you automatically assume it's going to be a 3-row SUV or maybe it's going to be a minivan, but not necessarily, right?
Families come in all shapes and sizes, so we look at every category, every major category, except for, you know, sports cars, because most sports cars aren't great family cars. But a lot of SUVs, a lot of sedans. And do you want to just start heading down the list?
Yeah. Let's head down the list, and then also out of the list, I'm assuming there's got to be one that must have been your favorite. We'll talk about that one too. But yeah, let's go down the list, see what we have.
Okay, best 2-row SUV for families, the 2024 Honda Passport. The Passport's a car that, you know, doesn't necessarily stand out in any one category, but does everything well. And it's larger than a lot of the 2-row midsize SUVs out there, especially on the inside cabin, and it took the win.
Yeah, I remember when that was first introduced, and there was somebody from the company there, and they described it as almost really a car for, you know, somebody that doesn't have kids, but when they borrow their siblings' kids, you know, their nieces and nephews, all of a sudden now they have room for it. So it could be an ideal vehicle for a couple that wants to be a little bit more adventurous, but also when it's time to babysit the nieces and nephews, there's plenty of room in the rear seat for them where everybody's happy, right?
Yep, and they have a new Trail Sport version of it out that's a little bit more rugged than the base models and gets you just a little bit further afield if you want to, you know, head off the beaten path.
There you go. And I'm assuming, and I stupidly left my list at home and didn't look, but I'm assuming somewhere in here there has to be a Telluride.
There is. Best 3-row SUV for families, the 2024 Kia Telluride. So the Kia Telluride wins all the awards, you know, from us, from everybody else. And the reason it does is because it's just so darn good. It excels in every way. It is basically the perfect three-row SUV right now.
It really is, and you know people like it. It's reasonably affordable compared to some other three-row SUVs. And even when you get it in the top trim level, it still sort of is. Although it gets pretty pricey, but compared to other vehicles with those same features, it becomes a pretty good economic comparison, right?
Especially when you look at its 10-year warranty. I mean, your kid can be in first grade, and the warranty on that car won't expire until he's in high school.
And even better yet, if your kid is in, a little bit older, that could be their hand-me-down car and still a car that has got all the safety features. So if you're thinking about buying a car when this type of car when your kid is 8 or 10 years old, by the time they turn 16, 17, they still have a car with still a warranty and a lot of good safety features.
Exactly. And, the same goes for next winter, the best compact SUV for families, 2024 Hyundai Tucson. Again, it has a 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty, a good overall pick, loaded with safety tech, just a good, solid overall value.
And that's a vehicle that's kind of grown up over the years, too. I was just looking at one yesterday, and it is very similar to the last model Hyundai Santa Fe Sport or the Kia equivalent. So it's a vehicle that's gotten a little bit bigger that could maybe 7 or 8 years ago wouldn't suit the same customers, but now it will.
Yep. They're all getting a little bit bigger. Saw the new Santa Fe, and the Santa Fe has a third row option again. So, they're all growing up a little bit.
Yeah, I will say I was at the Denver Auto Show yesterday, and I walked into the display, the Hyundai display, and the nice presenter person was there, and she said, "Do you have any questions?" And I said, "Yeah, that Land Rover Defender over there, can you tell me a little bit about that?"
A lot of parallels have been made, yes. It looks a lot like the Defender.
Yeah, it absolutely does. How about in the electric car realm? Is there a family car that is completely battery electric?
There are no electric cars on this list, but there is an electric vehicle for families, which includes both the car and SUV class. And that's the Hyundai Ioniq 5, best electric car for families.
Good. And that is, in that case, it's a plug-in hybrid. Is that what it is?
The Ioniq 5 is a full battery electric vehicle.
Oh, full battery electric. Okay. Okay, that's
yep.
where it was a little,
what,
yeah.
Yep. And what I like about the Hyundai Ioniq 5 is that the way Hyundai packages their cars, unlike some electric car makers that put all the electronics on the floor and give you a big front trunk, Hyundai puts all their electronics up where the engine would be. So the floor of the car is perfectly flat. There's tons of cabin space. There's no driveline hump because there's nothing that needs to go back to the back tires other than a cable that tells the motors in the back what to do. So it just the cabin is just wide open. It's great.
Yeah, it really is. We actually have a couple of them at my job that we actually use for driving school because we want kids to be able to experience what it's like to drive an electric car for driving lessons. So, they work out really well. And in the hybrid category, there's a couple of choices in there, right?
There is. There's the best hybrid car for families, and that's the Toyota Camry Hybrid. Camry, it's in the last year of its current product cycle, but it's still a really, really good car. It's another one of those cars that may not stand out in any one area, but stands out, in all areas on average. Camrys have been around for a long time, and they continue to sell well, and there's a reason for that, because they're very good cars.
Yeah, absolutely. And I haven't road tested one yet, at least for a full evaluation. And a little off your subject list here, but the Toyota Crown, what's your impressions of that?
The Toyota Crown is an interesting car for Toyota. It replaced the Avalon, which, you know, the Avalon had a had a kind of a reputation of being an older person's car.
The Park Avalon?
The Crown? Toyota Avalon.
Yeah. No, I sometimes refer to it as the Toyota equivalent of a Buick and called it a Park Avalon.
Oh, yes, absolutely, yeah. Yes. So, you know, it's an interesting, the Crown, and I actually get to drive its sister car this week, the Crown Signia. It's an interesting move for Toyota in that the Crown is aimed at a much younger demographic that may not even have it on its radar. It's a good car, but I don't know that shoppers even know it exists. The shopper they intended for it, even know it exists.
Yeah, I think you're right with that, because I think I've only seen sort of one of them out in the wild, and it was I was a little surprised when I saw it, because I haven't really seen very many on the road. So yeah, I think it's one of those ones that Toyota needs to work a little bit more on their marketing.
Right. Hey, let's get back to the list and
Absolutely.
With another Toyota product. This is the non-hybrid Camry. It's the best midsize car for families. All the same things go for the regular Camry as for the hybrid, except the hybrid has impressive gas mileage. Good, solid, all-around car.
And originally I said, you know, we think about cars for families, and you said families come in all different shapes and sizes. But minivan, and as I recall, Pacifica, right?
Yes, the 2024 Chrysler Pacifica was a big surprise for us because it knocked off the 11-time champion Honda Odyssey. The Pacifica has some things that nobody else has out there, like stow-and-go second-row seats. They fold flat into the floor so you can convert it, your van, from a passenger hauler to a cargo hauler in a few seconds.
And it's available as a plug-in hybrid if people wanted that, right?
It is. The Pacifica plug-in hybrid gives you, you know, a day's commute worth of electric power. And so it's basically an electric car for short drives, a gas-powered car for long drives.
And it looks, and I have a neighbor who's considering buying one, and she said, well, it's not a minivan. And I said, well, it is a minivan. She said, well, it doesn't look like a minivan.
Yep, Kia actually has a minivan out that they don't want anybody to call a minivan. They call it a multi-purpose vehicle. But, yeah, they're minivans.
Minivans
are awesome.
Yep.
Yeah,
no,
I mean,
they
have a stigma in the American marketplace, but they are fantastic. And one of the few cars that actually has more cargo capacity than a minivan is our next winner, and that's the 2024 Chevrolet Suburban for the best large SUV for families.
And really, when it comes down to that category, so you want to put a bunch of people and all their stuff in it, there really isn't much competition in that category, is there?
There are a few, but not many. There's also its sister vehicle, the Yukon XL. There's the Expedition XL, and then the Armada. Yeah, there are a few other big ones, but the Suburban is still the king. And the Suburban is, I believe, the longest-running continuous nameplate in the American market right now.
Yeah, it really is, and it's one of those vehicles that, you know, a lot of people have them. A lot of people have them, you know, and they say, well, you know, you're only in the car by yourself once in a while, but when you really need to carry six people in their luggage or six people and all their sporting equipment, or you're taking you and your five friends out to go play golf and you need to put someplace to put six golf bags, there isn't many vehicles that can do that. The Suburban does it and does it really well.
And the Suburban can, you know, tow a small city behind it while you're doing that.
Yeah, good point. If you have a good sized boat or a camping trailer or a horse trailer, you're right. It can tow a lot, and it's not a pickup truck, so it works out really well.
Exactly. There's a reason why it's been nicknamed the Chevy Subdivision.
I'm gonna have to steal that one, by the way. You know, feel free to steal the Park Avalon, but I'm gonna steal the Chevy Subdivision. So yeah,
we'll make it a trade.
There we go.
Hey, so The last car on the list is probably not a surprise. The best hybrid SUV for families, Toyota Highlander Hybrid.
It's just an awful nice vehicle, isn't it?
It really is. It does everything it's supposed to do and more. It doesn't look that big from the outside, but you get inside and it feels huge. And they even have a bigger one now with the Grand Highlander. But the Highlander Hybrid, you know, they've improved it steadily over the years. It finally has a really good infotainment system. It has a lot of the family-friendly tech from the Sienna minivan. I like the Highlander a lot.
Yeah, it is. It's an easy vehicle. When people ask me about, they're thinking about buying a new vehicle, they're looking at SUVs, it's easy to get in and out of. It's comfortable. It's quiet. And the idea that it's a hybrid and it gets a little bit better fuel economy just makes it that much better.
Gets a lot better fuel economy in the city. It's close on the highway, but in the city, the Highlander Hybrid, you know, blows the regular Highlander away.
Yeah, it really is. So when you look at your list here, and if you had them all sitting in front of you, is there one that you would pick as your favorite? Or are they all just, are they like kids? You can't pick your favorite kid.
A little like that, because, you know, everybody's looking for something different in a vehicle. First, I do need to explain, these aren't just my picks.
Right.
We base these on research. This is from the numbers, and I work with a bunch of really smart researchers who work to come up with this list. But that all said, if I wanted one of these in my driveway, it would probably be the Telluride.
Yeah, it's a good car. They did a really good job with that vehicle. And if people want to find out more about this list, as well as some of the other fantastic lists that U.S. News and World Report is known for, where would they go for that?
Just go to usnews.com and click on the Cars tab.
Perfect. Hey, John, I want to thank you for taking time out of your Sunday morning and joining us again on the Car Doctor program.
Thank you. Have a great week.
You as well. Take care. Bye-bye. Why don't we take a break, pay some bills? My name is John Paul. This is the Car Doctor program. And if you would like to call us, 781-837-4900, I hope it's the phone number. Jesse, is that the right phone number, 781-837-4900?
That's the one.
That's the one. So give us a call, 781-837-4900. We're going to take a break, pay some bills. My name is John Paul. This is the Car Doctor program. And we'll be back in just a couple minutes.
AAA is with you at every moment in your life. They have 24-hour, 7 roadside assistance, which covers you in any car you're driving or riding in, even a rental or your friend's wheels. They have great member rates on home and auto insurance, savings on travel, hotels, and rental cars, and discounts on hundreds of your favorite brands. You're covered on and off the road. Learn more at aaa.com/join.
Hi, I'm Jeff Cohen, all-around nice guy and owner of the best painting company on the South Shore, One Stop Painting. I have a fleet of trucks and over 30 people on staff year-round. They're painters, they're carpenters, and they're power washers waiting to show you why we are consistently voted the best year after year. Now is the time to set up your free quote. From start to finish, One Stop Painting will do everything in-house with no subcontractors. We offer low and high-pressure cleaning systems for your vinyl or wood homes. Even your roof can be cleaned safely and efficiently. One Stop Painting can replace any damaged wood, and our thorough preparation and painting will keep your house looking great for many years. I personally guarantee that. Call my office today at 508-888-3500 or visit us online at onestoppainting.com and let us show you why we're your one-stop for award-winning quality and service since 1986 and why we've held an A-plus accredited rating with the Better Business Bureau since the year we joined back in 1994.
One Stop Painting and Renovating.
Hey there, folks. It's Quinn Kelly reminding you to tune in Sunday night at 5 for the South Shore's first voice in sports talk radio, The Sports Exchange. Unmatched coverage of local high school action, as well as a relatable voice on all things Boston Pro Sports, we've got you covered live at 5 every Sunday night. Have a question for our host, miss last week's show, or just want to share a great sports story? You can find us on Twitter at SE on WATD. But remember, mark your calendar, folks, and we'll see you Sunday night at 5 for the Sports Exchange on 95.9 WATD.
Make an appointment Sunday morning at 11 for John Paul, the Car Doctor, on 95.9 WATD. Now, back to the Car Doctor.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor program on 95.9 WATD. So why am I in Denver, you may ask? Well, I'm here in the Mile High City because there is a three-day conference going on. It started this morning called Lifesavers. And Lifesavers is where, maybe a couple thousand people who are involved in traffic safety education, traffic safety businesses, child passenger safety, car seat manufacturers. There's a trade show that's going on. There's a lot of things going on, and there's a lot of workshops going on that it's everything from the latest in, it's interesting, it's in Denver, but the latest in marijuana testing, where I think Denver was one of the first places to legalize marijuana. But also things like different types of marketing companies are even here to help people with their marketing campaigns, or maybe they're doing some safety programs in their communities. There are some things about driver safety is here. Driving schools, businesses are here. But there's a lot of different things that are going on. And there's these multiple workshops. Today, starting at 10 o'clock, Driving Change, a panel of teen driver safety, community engagement, overcoming courtroom challenges and improving officer testimony. That's probably going to be a big one with a lot of the police officers that are here. I ran into a police officer from Burlington yesterday. He saw I was wearing a jacket that said Cape Cod, and he said, "Oh, you're from the Cape?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Where are you from?" And he said, "Boston." And then it turned out to be Burlington. And we have a kind of a mutual friend, Bernie Scipoletti, who used to be the safety officer up in Burlington. And he recently retired. So this guy sort of took his position. Then there is a traffic safety culture and the approach to statewide training. There's a lot of things going on. But tomorrow at I think it's 12:30 or 1 o'clock. I should probably know about this. But 12:30 or 1 o'clock, there was a luncheon sponsored by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, and they actually sponsor the lunch, which is good of them because usually they don't do that type of thing, but they actually sponsor the lunch, and at this luncheon, there is they give out awards, and they give out a variety of different awards of to different people, and for I'm trying to actually look through my phone and find the actual awards. The awards go to a variety of things, and they call them public service award recipients. And for instance, there's a person from Metro Atlanta who she's getting an award. She is the deputy chief. That's actually the New York person. Deputy chief and fleet officer, helping keep New York fleet drivers safe. The woman from Atlanta, for her work to ensure that all students can walk and bike to school safely. There's another company that was getting an award because of their alcohol-connected emergency programs. Not even sure what that really is. The oil change company, Grease Monkey, they're getting an award for their innovative work to ensure that all children in Idaho are safe on the road. And then there's two lifetime achievement awards. One of them is for a person who says for his tireless work in improving safety on Maryland's roadways. And unfortunately, that's given out posthumously. But then the other lifetime achievement award is actually for me. And it really has to do with trying to keep people safe as part of my job when I do things like child passenger safety and senior driving programs and all the things I've done for the past 35 years at AAA, but also part of this radio program where, you know, we talk about recalls and we talk about a lot of things to try to keep people safe while they're on the road and try to keep people's cars safe. So I'm here for that. I'm here for a Lifetime Achievement Award, and I'm quite honored that the people from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration think that I should get that. So that's going to happen tomorrow. And it is here in Denver where yesterday in Denver, it was about 50 degrees, cloudy, and about 60 mile an hour winds. It was really windy. It was almost like a nor'easter without the rain. It was windy and nasty. And my wife and I walked down to a restaurant to get something to eat, which was probably only less than a half a mile walk. And it was really, really nasty out. So hopefully it will smooth out a little bit better, especially on my return flight home. So all of that. So looking forward to that. But this should be fun. I might sneak into some of the workshops that are going on today. So see what that's all about. I did have to remember, because I'm in Denver, that there's a 2-hour time change. And I'm like, oh, 11 o'clock. I have to, you know, I'm looking forward to doing the radio show and talking with John Vincent from U.S. News and World Report. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's really 9 o'clock, the time here. So I had to remember to do that. So Jesse wouldn't have to do the Car Doctor program without me, which he's probably pretty capable of doing at this point. I don't know.
I don't think so.
You don't think so? No.
I tried that 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, when you couldn't get me on the air. Yeah. You did great for 30 seconds, yeah.
But thankfully, it was radio, so people couldn't see me crying and sweating, and I ripped my shirt off. So
that you were doing like an Incredible Hulk impersonation? You were
more just like a pure panic attack, yeah.
There you go. Yep. But while I was here, I dragged my wife over to the auto show, which is at the Denver Convention Center, which is actually where the Lifesavers Conference is, and convenient that it was right next door. And also at the hotel, I have to say, I was a little bit shocked about how expensive it is if you're a guest at this hotel to leave your car here. And it's interesting that in, you know, Massachusetts, I road test cars pretty regularly. Last year in Florida, I road tested cars pretty regularly. This year, not so much. The press fleets are pretty tight, but I called the press fleet administrator out here and asked about being able to get a car to borrow for a few days, and I'll write a review about it. And they were kind enough to do that. So Automotive Media Solutions, thank you to them for providing me with a car to be able to get back and forth. But it's $55 a night to park your vehicle, to self-park at the hotel, which I was a little shocked how expensive it was. And I commented as I was checking in about that. And they said, well, you're right in the middle of downtown Denver. Things are expensive. And I'm like, I guess so. But I suppose parking in a hotel in Boston would be about the same overnight. So at the auto show, I mentioned the new Hyundai Santa Fe, which really does look like a Land Rover Defender from about the windshield going backwards, especially the rear part of it. And I said to the woman who was there, I said to her, oh, can you tell me about that Land Rover Defender over there? And she kind of laughed and she said, yeah, a lot of people have said that. The front of it doesn't look like a Hyundai, doesn't look like a Land Rover. It's something in between. My wife's opinion is this is ugly in the front, but beauty's in the eye of the beholder. Ask her about me. But it is one of those vehicles that I think will be good, and it's a 3-row SUV with some decent rear room behind it. It's very upright and boxy, so it's going to have a lot of storage space, so pretty good. The other one, the Toyota Crown that John Vincent and I talked about a little bit that wasn't on the list, but I have only seen one on the road. It is supposed to be the replacement for the Avalon. It's a hybrid. It's a little bit different. In fact, somebody thought it was a pure electric car. It is a little bit different than the cars we're designed with. It has, if you call the area kind of where the windows roll down, the belt line of the car. If you look at the belt line of a Toyota Camry, it's a little lower with big windows. The belt line of the Crown is a little higher, And it sits up a little bit higher. It is, and I'm sure that adds to some structural rigidity. It probably handles a little bit better than a Camry, and no one can ever say that, you know, the Camry's a fantastic car. They sell a billion of them. But is it a fantastic handling car? It does just fine. But I'm pretty sure the Crown, in what I saw, probably does a little bit better. It's a little bit bigger than the Camry, but not a whole heck of a lot. It's certainly not an Avalon. And the Avalon was one of those cars that I kind of think they made a mistake getting rid of it, because I don't think they sold a lot of them every year, but they sold what I would think is enough of them. And it was actually a car that was, up until just a couple of years before they ended its production, you could actually buy it with a front bench seat. So it was one of the few cars you could actually put six adults in, cozy adults, but you could put six adults in it. So that was pretty good. There were a lot of electric vehicles at this show, including the Volkswagen and Kia, I think, had an electric vehicle test drive actually in the building. So, which is what they did at the New York Auto Show. They did an electric vehicle test drive in the building. So you could drive an electric vehicle around the inside of the building a little bit. I don't quite get that, but if you've never driven an electric car, I guess it's fine. But other than that, no Volkswagen display. They had the ID4, which is their smaller electric SUV. But that's really all they had there. So Volkswagen had no real display there. There was a lot of companies missing. And there was some surprises, because I'm in Colorado. There was a big display of the vehicle scene in the TV show Yellowstone. And Jesse, are you a fan of that show, Yellowstone?
It was okay for a little while, and then it got kind of boring.
Did it? Yeah, that's kind of what I haven't watched a lot of it. The beginning of it seemed a little bit better than some of the later episodes.
Yeah, I watched the first couple seasons, but then when it turned into just watching people just bring a horse abruptly to a stop for an entire episode. I don't know. There's too much of that stuff, and not enough. People shooting each other stuff. You know.
There you go.
We have David. We have David from Hull on the line. Whenever you're ready.
And somebody described Yellowstone as sort of the, the Godfather-ish sort of TV
Maybe.
Show. Or
did you ever watch the show Sons of Anarchy?
Yeah.
Okay, this Yellowstone is like Sons of Anarchy, but on horses
instead of motorcycles.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. But apparently they, and I guess I didn't pay enough attention, they have some pretty fancy cars on that show. So,
All I saw was pickup trucks.
Yeah, well, there was a bunch of those, but it said these are the vehicles shown. But I guess it was somebody must have driven around in a Bentley convertible. So, one of those.
They did have some money. Yeah. So, probably Beth, I think her character was. She had a pretty nice vehicle.
Yeah. Well, let's talk to David from Hull. Good morning. David? Hello?
Hey, John Paul? Hello?
There you are.
Yeah, it was Dave 7 in the history there. On
okay.
I wanted to give you two tips. Mr. Fritchell went to a university here in the East back at the turn of the century, and he was an assay out for the gold industry in the Denver area. And actually created some of the best built batteries for electric cars. And he built an electric car, and he made quite a few of them, but there's only one left. It's in the Colorado Museum in Denver, and it's a Fritchell car, F-R-I-T. Yes, F-R-I-T-S-C-H-I-L-E, Fritchell, named after himself.
I think the museum you're talking about might be the Fournoy Museum of Transportation in Denver.
No, it's in a different museum. But the Fournoy has the big boy, the Union Pacific big boy. But more important, it has Amelia Earhart's 1922 Kissel car called the Gold Bug that she drove from California 7,000 miles in 1926, 1927, whatever.
All the way to
Medford, when her sister got accepted at Harvard University, and Amelia's father had an affair, and the mother divorced him. So the mother and Amelia drove by car. She wouldn't be caught dead on a train, So she drove a car 7,000 miles, and she covered every industrial park from California to Massachusetts.
Wow. Well, because
I
I just turned the brochure over. It does say the Union Pacific Big Boy, world's largest steam engine, and Amelia Earhart's Kissel Goldbug is what they called it, is on display. Yeah. Yes. So, I picked up this brochure yesterday and said to my wife, do you want to go to a car museum now? And somehow she didn't seem that excited, but maybe we'll go. It's not too far away, so
I think she would enjoy it. I really do.
There we go.
Anyways, I did want to put a plug in for the Veterans Vintage Motor Car Carrier of America. The headquarters is out there. The president and a lot of antique auto groups, and they made commitment to buying antique cars and having trips that you go different sections of the country. So that they specialize in. And they're all through the Denver area. So if you were there for a week, you could actually go to some of the car club meets in the different cities around Denver. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I'm only here for another day or so. And but there is certainly a lot to see here. I kind of wish the weather was a little bit better, but I have to say the Denver airport is one of the most interesting, weird airports I've ever been in. It's gigantic, and apparently, and Jesse should be interested in this. Apparently, it's haunted.
I'm not sure about that, but I know they built the terminal to look like mountains, like the Colorado Rockies, and they built it, 30, 40 miles east of Denver on the flat plains. So it cost very little to build it, and the runways, it was all level ground. It was actually an economical-wise decision to build it there. So
yeah, the main runway apparently is 3 miles long because the air is thin, and you need a long runway to get these big planes up off the ground.
Yeah,
but it has
the shuttle there if they need it.
Yeah, and it has one of the most intricate and huge designed luggage systems that worked for about 3 days, and it broke, and now it's just a bunch of empty tunnels underneath the airport. So.
Yeah, well, the only problem with that airport, and I'll be honest with you, is people that live in Colorado, there's X amount of vehicles that take and shuttle people out there, and if you miss it, you got to wait hours to get another one. So
yeah,
it's not a convenient place to fly in and out of unless you plan it right.
Yeah.
Good show, and thank you for your service again.
And anytime you have some interesting little tidbits you want to share with us, I know you have some really interesting stuff. When I read your newsletters when they pop up and things, really interesting stuff. Anytime, feel free to give us a call and we'll talk about it.
No problem.
All right, take care.
We are having a big time in Framingham. In late May and June, with automobiles that were built in Massachusetts.
I think that's actually been put on hold.
Part of it is, but part is still going to be on. Ken Ramon, I think, is his name.
Yep.
He's the one heading it, and it should be a very interesting time.
Yeah, he emailed me and said he thought because of availability of vehicles that it might be, but you're right, maybe part of it's going to be put on hold, because he actually was kind enough to ask me if I wanted to be a moderator for some panel, and I don't know that I'm going to be back up north by then, so I didn't want to commit to anything. But Ken Lemoyne's a great guy, and how I hooked up with him was, he's an account rep for a company called Wax Oil, which makes an undercoating product that a lot of people use on restorations. And it just sort of locks the rust in place and keeps stuff from rusting away. So, good stuff. So,
and he's still distributing that.
Yeah. As far as I know. Yep. All right. Thanks, David.
Thank you, John Paul.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. If you would like to join us, our phone number is 781-837-4900. You can give us a call. A woman wrote in to me and said she had a Volvo with a timing belt issue. It was a 2015 Volvo. She bought it used with 90,000 miles on it. It had 90,000 on it. The timing belt failed. The engine self-destructed. Volvo said because it broke early, because Volvo doesn't recommend replacing the timing belt on that vehicle till it's got 120,000 miles on it. Volvo said we'll pay for 30% of the cost of a new engine, which apparently the new engine was $12,000. And she wanted to know if she had any recourse on this. And I would guess no. And one of the main reasons is because she purchased another vehicle. She never kind of followed through to get this repaired. Sometimes when you purchase another vehicle, they're more apt to do it. The one thing she might be able to do is she might be able to take Volvo to court to get reimbursed some cost under the, I don't know if I have this exactly right, but the right of merchantability. In other words, if you buy a toaster and it's got a 90-day warranty and it quits making toast after 6 months, you expect it to a toaster to make toast for more than 6 months. When you buy a car, you expect it to operate as a vehicle with a minimum amount of maintenance, or the recommended amount of maintenance, to last a certain period of time. So the idea that the timing belt failed at 90,000 and it ruined the car, she might be able to go with something there. Maybe. But the idea of, she said she actually emailed and wrote to Volvo. She got no response other than they were willing to pay 30% of the cost of a new engine, which I don't know if that meant that her 70% was going to be 12,000 or the total cost was going to be 12,000. 2015 car that she bought used with 30,000 on it. I wonder if it had more mileage on it than what the speedometer said. That's always a possibility that, you know, there still is, back when cars had mechanical speedometers, to turn a speedometer back, you would need to take the odometer out of the car. You would need to disassemble it and you would take all the little wheels and put them back together at a lower mileage and reinstall it back in the vehicle.
Phone that's lines how, are lighting up, sir. We have John from Norwood. If you want to go back to the phones.
You want to take a break first?
We can do one call and then go break.
Okay. All right. Let's talk to John in Norwood. John, good morning.
Morning, John. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad. Hey, I bought new tires probably 5-6 months ago.
Okay.
And shortly after, I noticed there was no weight on the rear driver's side wheel.
All right.
So they had doing that one, and it didn't really seem to impact the driving at all.
Mm-hmm.
But the other day, I took that wheel off, and I found a little weight on the inside. Is there a reason for it being on the inside, or I thought they were on the outside of the wheel?
No. Even with old-fashioned steel wheels, when you high-speed balanced a tire, there'd be a weight that went on the inside and a weight that went on the outside. With alloy wheels, which most cars have, a lot of times what will happen is they'll put a weight on the inside, the stick-on weight on the inside, and they'll put the weight that would normally go on the outside as far to the outside edge of that alloy wheel without being on the outside. Other times they'll use a specially designed clip-on weight that you'll bang onto the alloy wheel. They don't look as pretty as the stick-on ones, but that's the way that they'll do it. So it sounds like either one way or another, if it was a stick-on weight, it came unstuck, or if it was a clip-on weight, it fell off. But yeah, when a tire is properly balanced, ideally when a tire is balanced, there should be almost no weight on it. But when a tire is properly balanced, there should be a weight on the inside and a weight sort of on the outside or the outside edge of the tire, so you get a nice smooth balance.
And just so I'm clear, when I'm saying inside, I'm saying, part away from the parts you can't see.
Right. Yep. Yeah. If you looked at any car that has the wheel's balanced, and it doesn't have weights on the outside edge. You'll notice a weight on the inside edge closest underneath the car, and you'll notice another weight on as far away from that on the opposite side. And ideally, you should never see, you know, and I'm making up the number, but a 2 ounce weight at the 6 o'clock position and a 1 ounce weight at the 12 o'clock position, because they're sort of offsetting each other. You don't want two heavy weights right opposite each other. That means the first weight was too big to start off with, so you kind of start over again and rebalance it. But yeah.
What do the weights actually do? I guess I really don't understand what that
it takes. Everything vibrates. So if you even took a gyroscope, a kid's gyroscope. Remember when you were a kid and you had a gyroscope, you pull a string and the thing would spin and stay level. That even has a little bit of a vibration in it. So everything that turns picks up a little bit of a vibration. And what the weight does, it offsets the heavy spots of the tire. Every tire has a heavy spot. Every tire has a high spot. Every wheel has a heavy spot. Every wheel has a high spot. Ideally, when you go to balance tires, you mount the high spot of the tire opposite the low spot of the wheel, so you get it as round as possible, but still you have some weight irregularities, and what you're doing is you're adding weight to offset the heavy part of the tire.
So if I pulled out the other wheels, I should probably I would find weights on the inside of all those tires as well.
Absolutely. Unless you got the one set of tires that was absolutely perfect, but probably not.
I doubt it.
Yeah. Okay?
All right.
Take care. Yep. Bye-bye. Why don't we take another quick break? My name's John Paul. This is the Car Doctor Program. You're listening to 95.9 WATD. We'll be right back.
Since 1998, Damien's and Hanson has been providing great food, drink, live entertainment, and fun in a comfortable and relaxed pub atmosphere. Their award-winning kitchen is open for lunch 7 days a week, and the pub stays open each night till 1. Grab a classic South Shore bar pie or enjoy other Damien's favorites like the house-made steak tips or chicken wings. Whether you're looking for something to eat or just thirsting for the coldest beer in town, you don't have to search any further than Damien's. So drop in to Damien's Pub, located at 279 Spring Street in Hanson.
AAA is with you at every moment in your life. They have 24/7 roadside assistance, which covers you in any car you're driving or riding in, even a rental or your friend's wheels. They have great member rates on home and auto insurance, savings on travel, hotels, and rental cars, and discounts on hundreds of your favorite brands. You're covered on and off the road. Learn more at AAA.com/join.
This is my time.
Hey guys, it's Lexi James.
And we're Cryer Creek.
Twilight Showcase Radio, hosted by Sandy Stride and Keith James.
Tune into Twilight Showcase Radio Sundays on 95.9 WATD and 95.9WATD.com.
Search for Twilight Showcase on Facebook.
And visit twilightshowcase.org.
Twilight Showcase, tonight from 8 to 10 on 95.9 WATD.
Make an appointment Sunday morning at 11 for John Paul, the Car Doctor, on 95.9 WATD. Now, back to the Car Doctor.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor Program. Our phone number is 781-837-4900. And let's go to Rick from Westboro. Rick.
Hello,
how are you?
Hi, JP.
Yes, sir.
Hey, sorry, they had me on hold. Rick from West Palm. How's everything, sir?
Oh, I see. You know, West Palm, Westboro. Jesse gets confused, but yeah. So that's all right. First of all,
I have to thank you very much. When I get in touch with you on Twitter, you usually get back to me like within 48 hours, and I really appreciate it.
And really, Twitter is probably one of the places I don't look at it that often. So if you don't hear from me, you know, on Twitter right away, just keep doing it over and over again, or send me an email on my AAA email, whatever works, or Facebook or something, just in case. So always try to get back.
So far, so good. And again, I can't thank you. I have a hypothetical question for you, if you just indulge me.
Go ahead.
I have a 2015 Toyota Highlander. It's got 150,000, runs like a top.
Yep.
I could get maybe 12-13K for it.
Yeah.
The question I have to you, of course, is when something major does occur, and only talking like in a dollar amount, you know, in the thousands, how much would you say, if it were you, I'd say, okay, the car runs great, and I'm willing to spend X amount to fix it?
Well, it used to be, the kind of rule of thumb was if you spent half the value of a car. So for easy math, you know, cars worth 12 grand. You know, if you had something really super major go wrong and it was, you know, it was going to cost 6 grand to fix it, it still sort of made sense to fix it because you would get, you know, especially the Toyota, you'd get another, you know, 75, 80, 100,000 miles out of it. So for 6 grand, you know, especially if the car was absolutely broken, say the transmission went out on it, and it was going to cost 4 grand to put a transmission in it, and you're like, well, that's a lot of money to put in this car that's getting a little bit older, but you know, with the transmission that's bad, it's not really worth anything. Put 4 grand into the transmission, all of a sudden it's good. Now with the crazy price of used cars, and they've come down a little bit, they've softened a little bit, but still people are putting a lot of money. I was talking to somebody with a Ford Explorer who, like many Explorers, the engine failed, and they ended up putting a used engine in it. They put a bunch of new parts in it, and they're like, hey, it's almost like brand new again. I've always kept the body up good. You know, it sounded like putting 10 grand into it was dumb, but for 10 grand, I got a car I'm going to drive another 4 or 5 years, and I'll be in pretty good shape with it. So the old rule of thumb of half the cost is kind of gone, but still it's something to still think about. When you think about, let's see, I'm going to put 4 grand into it. What am I going to be able to buy for 4 grand? Nothing, really. That's the problem. That make sense?
You know what? I think it kind of used to make sense. But when you have something like, in my case, I have a car that's, you know, nine plus years, runs like a top. I actually sent you a little message where I took it down to the Keys a couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
And I got my best gas mileage ever.
Yeah, I think I said back my wife wants to go to the Keys by boat. Fortunately, not
yes,
my boat.
Yes,
so yeah,
yes,
yeah,
did.
Yeah,
correct.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, yeah. So again, I think when you got a car that runs that good, and if you say you had to put kind of typical as it starts to get older, you might have to put a steering rack in it. You know, rack and pinion steering unit. It could be a couple grand to do that. Absolutely makes sense to do one on that, you know, because it does run so good. It's a Toyota product, and I would just go ahead and do it. So, yeah.
Listen, have a good weekend.
All right. Thank you. Take care. All right. Bye-bye. Let's see. We have a couple minutes left, and let's see if we can get to Ken in Topsfield real quick. Ken, real quick.
Real quick. When I was listening to your program this morning, the part on the how much you paid in Denver for parking, it faded out, and I didn't hear it, and I was just curious because we're going to San Diego. We're driving tomorrow.
Oh, and, all right.
How much was it in Denver?
In Denver, to park at the hotel was $55 a night.
Yep. San Diego was 40, 45, and 55.
Yep.
All that,
yep.
And I couldn't get over it on top of, you're lucky if you can get a room in a major hotel, a national chain for under 200 in a city. So
yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. I'm here with a big group of people. So there's a big group of people rate, which helps a little
right.
bit, but I think it's $300 a night for the hotel. And I mean, it's a very pleasant hotel. I mean, it's right in downtown Denver. But what I was sort of amazed about though, you know, I'm still in Florida, and I parked at the Tampa airport, and I think 4 days at the Tampa airport in long-term parking, which is only about a 5-minute walk to the terminal, was only about $80, which to park at, pre-flight in Chelsea,
right.
I think would be 100, you know, and that's a way cheaper than Logan's parking. I think it would still be $100 more than that. So parking at the airport, pretty reasonable. Parking at the hotel here in Denver, not as reasonable. And I was amazed. We were not far from the airport, and there were all these new condos being built. And they're sort of in the middle of nowhere, but they're in the flight path of the airport, starting at 400 to the 800,000s in a condo. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I found $12 a night, and almost like I'm doing the Dance of Joy. That's like 7 miles from downtown. So it'd be like staying in, a few miles just out. But the very best, Ian. We'll talk to you in the future.
All right. Take care and have a safe trip on the road there. It should be fun.
It should be. Nice time of year. See you later.
All right. All right. Take care. Bye-bye. So we have, we have people all over the place listening, and it's always good to do that. And we will be back at home base next week. So I apologize if things faded in and out just a little bit. We are, we have a couple little things going against us. I am using an app to connect to the studio instead of a professional microphone and a piece of digital equipment that connects to the studio. The app works pretty well most of the time, but it does rely on the Wi-Fi here or cell phone signal, depending on whether I use my phone or an iPad. So it's not quite as solid as using the equipment. And Jesse's at a little bit of a disadvantage because he's still in the temporary studio. And
I've been staring at the sun waiting for this eclipse to start happening.
So like we heard during the news, don't stare at the eclipse with sunglasses on. You need really, really dark glasses. You need the equivalent of welding glasses. So real welding glasses, like for arc welding. So they should be so dark that when you put them on, you can't see anything. And for that reason, don't wear them while you're driving. It seems dumb that people have to say that. But don't wear them while you're driving. And it's pretty interesting that a lot of businesses are giving their employees the time off to go outside and stare at the sun, I guess. So, mm-hmm. But don't stare at the sun.
I gave my employees magnifying glasses, so hopefully that works too.
There you go. Always a considerate boss you are.
I do what I can.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Hey, that music means we need to go. I want to thank Jesse for holding this leaky boat together for us. I appreciate that. So, until next week, make sure you wear your seatbelt, drive safely, be good to your car. And if you do see an emergency vehicle by the side of the road, slow down or move over. It saves lives. Talk to you all next week. Bye-bye.